Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yes!
Paul touches it.
The doctor
goes to Hart. On Thompson steps right, shoots for the win. A three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary.
Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, an overtime episode of Locked On Rockets. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. So what we're doing tonight is we're doing a special overtime episode of Locked On Rockets. Basically, there were so many thoughts bubbling over from this loss against the Oklahoma City Thunder that I needed to express more things about this team. And here to join me to do that is avid Rockets fan, Britt Robotista from Twitter. Many of you know her. How's it going, Britt?
I'm good. How are you tonight?
Well, I'm a little tired from work and a little tired from this Rockets team and the way that they played most recently in their most recent game. But other than that, I'm doing pretty well.
Sounds good.
So basically, Britt, first thing, I want to get your impressions and just your general reaction from this loss against the Thunder.
Well, I think I initially assumed that they were going to lose. It was the second game of a back-to-back. James, I guess in retrospect, had been in the middle of a very cold streak, and it continued on. So as the game was going on, and especially that first quarter when our OKC decided to go on that big, huge lead, I realized then that it was going to be, you know, a pretty long night, and it didn't end until it ended, and it felt pretty bad.
You know, I think it's funny, right there, just in that moment, you almost said Golden State instead of OKC, and I did the same thing on this morning's podcast, the Friday podcast that I put out, the initial reaction, where I almost said the Oklahoma City Warriors instead of the Oklahoma City Thunder, and it's just, I think it's just rooted in our psyche as Rockets fans, as media members, that we've got this almost PTSD when it comes to the Warriors, where when there's a loss that feels this bad, we just immediately want to start, like, psychologically blaming the Warriors, which I think is kind of funny as a fan base. I think we can all sympathize with each other on that one.
Yeah, it's funny and unfortunate that we associate any loss at this point to the Warriors. And I think also since Warriors fans tend to come out anytime there's a bad loss, that sort of exacerbates the issue as well.
Oh, absolutely. They love coming out of the woodworks and giving Rockets fans and just media members and everybody hell, especially after a bad loss like this one. But in this game, and I think I spent a little bit too much in the pod from earlier today kind of going over the reaction to the loss and kind of justifying some of the reasons for it rather than getting into some of the X's and O's of the game. And I'm known to do that from time to time where, you know, maybe one recap, I spend a little bit more time focusing on some of the in-the-game reasons, and then other recaps, I'm talking about the, you know, reaction to the game as a whole, whether it's a good reaction, bad reaction, or that of that, or things of that nature. But one of the areas that a lot of focus was given to immediately after the game was the fact that this Rockets team has basically bought into Morey ball so much that ignoring the mid-range is almost becoming evident that this is a problem for this team. And I, you know, a lot of people have been talking about that. So as far as maybe seeing them integrate more mid-range shots, where do you stand on that front, Britt?
I actually think they should be doing that. And I have been concerned ever since, I think, the playoff series last year with the Warriors, that a lot of teams have caught up to the Rockets system that, oh, they're going to shoot a ton of threes. And when they are shooting a lot of threes and hitting them, it's been, you know, great. They can, you know, run teams out of the arena quite easily. But at this point, since so many teams are also shooting threes and expecting for the Rockets to shoot threes, they are also assuming that they're not going to hit any sort of mid-range shots whatsoever. And since we have, quite frankly, sort of flaky three-point shooters, you know, some are better than others, but just in general, flaky three-point shooters, it's been frustrating, to say the least, that they aren't at least trying to integrate a little bit of mid-range. I'm not to the extent of, you know, someone like Eddie Johnson, where they're, when he's saying that they should be shooting mid-range all the time, the entire game. But I am in a sort of point of view that they need to do some of it so that they're, you know, a little bit less predictable during a game, especially when they are not hitting those threes like we expect them to.
I'm in total agreement with you. I think I had a comment at one point during the game where, look, James Harden, for all his greatness, and, you know, will go down as one of, if not maybe the greatest scorer of all time, possibly, or just, you know, ability to score, greatest offensive player, we can, whatever we want to call it. But at times, he is predictable because we know exactly what his MO is. He's either going to go for a step back three or he's going to drive all the way to the rim. And even his floater has helped to mitigate this a little bit. But he does, somebody, you know, kind of commented back to me and said he shoots his floater a little bit too close to the basket to really be considered a floater, like Austin Rivers, who kind of shoots them from, you know, maybe he starts gathering the ball and shooting from outside of the paint, whereas James Harden is pretty much right there at the basket before he shoots his floaters. And so it's kind of this thing where if this team doesn't take what the defense gives them, then they're suddenly boxing themselves into this predictable style of play. So I 100% agree with you. If you had to take a guess right now, as far as, and we talk about their flaky three-point shooting, if you had to take a guess right now, who are their top three-point shooters?
So I'm assuming that McLemore is probably either two or one. Harden has to be one. And you're talking about percentage, like makes,
percentage wise. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm assuming it's probably Harden one, McLemore two, and potentially Tucker, or maybe Rivers is pretty close. But I think this probably those three. And I know Westbrook's probably down in the, you know, the worst one from the team.
Oh, yeah. Westbrook is absolutely at the bottom of the pack. No questions. Yeah, no question about that. However, it's actually Michael Frazier is actually shooting 50% from behind the arc. No. In seriousness, though, it's and then we do have Chris Clemens, who's shooting 39%, but, you know, doesn't have enough reps to actually be considered that. But no, you're not far off from the mark. James Harden leads the team at 37.6. Followed by actually Daniel House Jr. at 37.4. Then we've got PJ Tucker, 37.3. Ben McLemore is fourth at 36.5. And then RIP Gary Clark, 35.3. And then all the way down there, we've got Austin Rivers at 31.6 and Eric Gordon at 31.4. And like you said, Westbrook is down there at the very bottom, 23%.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. And I guess I forgot that. You know, I guess when it comes to House, he was shooting pretty well until after his, you know, flu/illness. And then since then, it's been a struggle, to say the least.
He was. And that's, I think, something that hasn't been highlighted enough. I think I brought it up recently, maybe earlier this week or potentially last week. But the drop off in production from the forwards has been a bit of a concern to me. In fact, I think I brought it up in the podcast where I brought Michael Shapiro on from Sports Illustrated, where I brought up the fact that Daniel House Jr. and PJ Tucker over their last 10 games each have shot an abysmal percentage from behind the arc. PJ Tucker's down to somewhere around like 24% over his last 10 or 11 games. And then Daniel House Jr. was hovering around 32 or 33%. And both of those guys were well over the 40% mark for much of the early season. So having those guys regress so much has definitely hurt this team a bit.
Yeah, it's been pretty awful. I'm not sure what has happened. When it comes to Tucker, I'm pretty concerned that he is tiring out, just because for whatever reason, I can never understand. D'Antoni will not expand the rotation. Even before, you know, Gary Clark was waived, he should have been incorporating him a little bit more. As for House, I really want to say it is due to whatever illness that he has, and he's still trying to get his strength back up. But at the same time, it's been, what, 2 weeks maybe? My time tables are sort of off, but it's been a little bit since House has returned, and yet he still hasn't gotten back to, you know, a decent shooter, as well as his defense has sort of dropped off as well.
Yeah, not to mention he had that, you know, emotional reaction the other day in the Atlanta game, and that didn't look, wasn't a great look. You know, I, again, don't want to buy too much into that, but, you know, maybe he was just more so frustrated with himself than he was necessarily with James Harden. But that's just, I don't know, it's kind of, the team's in a bit of a funk right now. You know, it's not like they're stringing together a bunch of losses in a row, but this one loss against Oklahoma City was maybe a bit concerning and just overall a bit disappointing because of the kind of emotions that were tied up in this loss. And, you know, we'll keep talking about it here in a second. We've got some more thoughts to share. Wow, almost said shots to share. That's not quite right. Anyways, we've got more thoughts to share and we'll have those in just 1 second. So don't go anywhere. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, a special edition of Locked On Rockets, an overtime edition of Locked On Rockets. We just had so much to talk about, and we wanted to keep talking to all of you guys, our loyal listeners, and here with me to continue discussing this, you know, bit of a letdown against the Oklahoma City Thunder is Britt Robatista. And so, Britt, really quickly, you know, right after the game or near the end of the game, right, there was that moment where Westbrook was sitting on the bench away from the rest of the team as they were huddled around Mike D'Antoni, and the national media, ESPN, they've already started taking this image and they're blowing it way out of proportion. What do you think about this?
I mean, I think that image is, you know, that happens quite often. I've heard from, you know, various analysts. Unfortunately, I didn't play any sort of sports or anything like that when I was a kid. I wasn't that good with sports at all. But I did understand that when people have bad losses or, you know, just are at the end of a game where they're not in the game, they may not necessarily sit next to their entire team, especially if they're not going to be going back in there. The frustrating bit about that was also that, you know, right after James Harden walked over there, and, you know, for the media to say that, oh, there's some tension brewing and that's been going on, you know, basically the entire season at this point, it's just, I guess, more disappointing than anything else. It shouldn't matter unless they're talking about it or they're saying something that could be, you know, suggest that there is an issue. But every time they, you know, every time something, you know, strange happens, they, you know, the media goes, you know, does their extra bits for whatever reason.
I mean, you gotta paint trust issues somehow, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yes, there's a million trust issues with the, you know, Houston Rockets, who are 13 games over, you know, 500. Of course there are.
And so I didn't catch this earlier on today's podcast, but, you know, I had briefly mentioned this exact moment as well, kind of gave my initial thoughts to it and then, you know, spent the day thinking more about it. But I noticed on Instagram, Russell Westbrook had actually commented below the photo that ESPN posted or the short video that they posted of him sitting on the bench away from the team. And he basically said, stop trying to spread lies or make something happen. I don't have the post right in front of me, but he basically called him out. He said, stop trying to make something happen here. There's nothing going on here. This is just me, you know, sitting on a bench is basically what he said.
Yeah, no, I saw that too. And I think that's the other thing as well, and maybe the fortunate thing. So, you know, when Chris Paul was still at the team, it, you know, even though I still believe that I don't necessarily think, you know, Harden and CP3 had issues, they probably didn't have as close of a relationship as we all assumed, you know, when they were first trading for Chris Paul. But with, you know, Russell and James Harden, they have that relationship all the way back to where they're 10 years old. So hopefully they can weather these various storms of, you know, fake controversies or whatever is going on when it comes to, you know, the national media and the Rockets in general.
Absolutely. I don't expect the national media to be able to drive a wedge between Westbrook and Harden. I think that you're absolutely right that James Harden and Chris Paul had, you know, they had a mutual respect for each other and they had a relationship, you know, kind of on a professional level where it was just, hey, Chris Paul, and there's that video of him and Jay-Z where it's just, you know, hey, I really want to go play with this guy. Let me, you know, I want to go play with James. But James and Russ, they go so far back that they've got a friendship that extends well beyond just basketball. They have, you know, a brotherhood about them that Russ has never really shared with anybody else. He didn't have that relationship with Kevin Durant, and we kind of saw how that relationship fizzled out. And, you know, they might be okay, you know, on decent, maybe not speaking terms or anything these days, but, you know, at least James Harden and Russell Westbrook, Russ now has this guy who can, you know, call him out on stuff. And ideally, Russ can call James out when he's not providing the, you know, the exact effort or energy that maybe the team needs of him in that moment. Now, speaking of Russ, I have this interesting stat, and I kind of wanted to see what you thought about it. Basically, the reason I'm not overreacting to this loss is I just wanted to go back and kind of look back over a stretch. And I can't remember the exact game that Russ took the wraps off of his fingers. So I just went back until I called it. The first game that I picked in this stretch was the Sacramento Kings game where they lost on the buzzer beater three. I think that sounded about right because that was like a really killer game from Westbrook. He had 34 points, 8 assists, just 3 boards, but you know, it was a great game from Westbrook, and I think that was one of the first games that he had without the wraps on his hands. So going from there, all the way up through the OKC loss, that's 12 games that Westbrook's played in. The Rockets are 9-3 in that stretch, with the 3 losses coming from the buzzer beater 3 from Sacramento, the really disappointing Christmas Day loss against the Warriors, and now the Oklahoma City loss.
No, that I'm not surprised, it really makes sense that the team has done incredibly well once Russell, you know, got his fingers at least a little bit better. I think it was during Christmas there was that image of Russell's fingers and one of them was like really big and bloated, but I'm assuming that's just going to be his fingers for the rest of his life. He's going to just have, you know, bad fingers, you know, from, you know, being a point guard and carrying that ball for, you know, so many minutes every single day for years and years. But in general, if he's at a state where he is able to manage that to acceptable levels, and for the most part, other than that bad, horrible missed dunk on during the 76ers game, he's been, you know, he's shown that he is, you know, from both his knee and from his fingers, that he has improved, you know, tremendously, or at least back to acceptable levels when it comes to his shooting and, you know, defensive effort. It seems like he's not thinking so much in his head, and he's, you know, moving the way that he usually does when he, you know, when he was back in OKC and, you know, destroying teams for whatever reason.
He's playing exactly how we expected him to play when he first joined the Rockets at the start of the season. I think that he wasn't 100% healthy. And again, over this stretch of 12 games where they're 9-3, he's averaging 28.7 points per game, 6.8 rebounds, 6.1 assists. He's got a steal in there, 26% from behind the arc. So not his season average of 23%. So, you know, a few percentage points higher there. Just overall, really solid numbers over that stretch. And each one of those losses, again, 9-3, each one of those losses, the buzzer beater three from Sacramento, obviously it was a disappointing loss. You thought you had won the game off of the layup from Russ himself, and then the Sacramento comes back and Bielitsa hits that three, so that's kind of a killer right there. The disappointing loss on Christmas Day, and now the Oklahoma City loss. Those losses aren't necessarily bad. I mean, the Warriors loss was disappointing. Again, it's the Warriors, but you came out, you had a lackluster game. Basically, what I'm getting at is this team is playing good basketball.
No, I completely agree with that. I think a lot of the pessimism, and maybe it's just, you know, a matter of just being a, you know, typical Rockets fan, is that, you know, we expect for them to win every single game. And for the most part, other than, you know, the game that happened on Thursday, you know, a few of the other games, they have been in it. And it can be, you know, disappointing when we see games like, you know, the game versus Oklahoma City, when they're just, you know, it's not clicking. None of the threes are hitting. Even when they try to do a layup, nothing's hitting, or they're just like missing, you know, the world and back. So I guess I'm a little bit more optimistic than most, or at least more optimistic than a lot of the Twitter sphere when it comes to the Rockets. I think a lot of people underestimated them at the beginning of the season, and then they sort of saw that, hey, now, you know, Russell and Harden and the bench are doing okay in some aspects, and then they expect for them to be world beaters. When, you know, I think, like everyone has said, they're very much inconsistent.
And I think in a way the inconsistency might actually play into their favor come playoffs, because it really, I kind of went back and I looked at the schedule for the season, and they don't really have, apart from that stretch where they did lose three in a row, which they were pretty much in all of those games against, it was the Clippers, then the Nuggets, and then the Mavericks, where they lost three games in a row. Or I might be mixing those up. It might have been Nuggets then Clippers. But either way, it was those three teams in a row earlier this season where they went on the three-game skid. They haven't gone on like a significant losing streak by any means. So the inconsistency with which they play at might actually play to their favor come the playoffs, because I find myself hard-pressed to imagine this team would, you know, get swept or just not be able to string together four wins across a seven-game playoff series. That's where my optimism lies.
Yeah, and I think my optimism also lies with the 17-18 season. I mean, I'm not saying that they are going to be, you know, the world beaters that that team was. And, you know, hopefully the end of that season won't, or end of the season won't end in a similar really sad way that the 17-18 season did.
But I think hamstring related fashion.
Yeah, yes, yes. I never want to hear about that again. But in general, if I was, you know, sort of ignoring that, you know, that team had losing streaks as well and had sort of inconsistencies. I was sort of, you know, thinking back about it. And that was really the first season I was on Twitter, and just like, you know, it didn't feel like that team was getting their stride until after All-Star break, maybe slightly before in January or so. But, you know, in December and the beginning of January, they were having, you know, losing streaks. They had that five-game losing streak. I'm looking at the schedule right now between the 20th of December and then the 28th of December of, you know, 2017. And then they had, you know, sort of blips of where they were not playing as well, and then all of a sudden it just sort of clicked at the end of January and they won a ton of games in a row. So I guess where I am going at is that, you know, ultimately the team, you know, there are things that need to be improved about this team. I completely admit their defense is flaky, to say the least. They're 18th right now. Their offense can, you know, is really good until, you know, those games where they're tired or they don't have the legs or whatever goes on, and then they just, you know, miss everything in their and the kitchen sink. But the, you know, the Rockets team of 17-18 didn't really necessarily hit that stride until later on in the year. And I feel like there is a potential for that for this team as well. And I think a lot of people sort of forget about that. It's sort of harder to remember, like, what you're feeling like the second that, you know, there is a, you know, 15-20 point blowout game, like, you know, the Oklahoma City game or the Golden State game, although that wasn't as bad. But I guess my optimism is that, you know, it's a long season. It's 82 games. There's things that won't necessarily happen during the playoffs that are happening during the regular season. And Morey has shown that he will, you know, bring in role players or other contributors who would be able to, you know, potentially help out even from a minute, you know, using, you know, whatever remaining of the MLE. So I guess my optimism is that, you know, the team that we'll see in April and May and, you know, hopefully June will be a lot different than the team that we're seeing, you know, on January 9th or 10th of 2020.
And I think those are all phenomenal points, and that's one of the reasons that I wanted to bring you in here. I think that I skewed a bit more negative than I tend to do earlier this morning when I had the initial recap for the game. I try to keep myself middle of the pack usually. I think that it's not great to be blindly optimistic, and it's also not great to be, you know, a negative Nancy when it comes to these losses. I think that we can look at them and we can, you know, try to learn things from these losses, learn things about the team. You know, we can react to them. Yes, we can be, you know, happy. We can be over the moon over a great win. And we can also be frustrated with a disappointing loss. But it doesn't have to be doom and gloom. And it doesn't have to be just blind faith that the team is the clear-cut championship favorites, because they're not at this point. They're just not the clear-cut favorites. But that doesn't mean that they're not contenders. There's probably about five or six contenders this year.
No, I definitely agree. And I think a lot of it is that the team is going to have struggles. I mean, we can see it, you know, as of, you know, the Friday night games. Utah, not even a month ago, was looking like they were going to be out of the playoffs and just, you know, completely a disaster of a season. But now they have turned it around and have a, you know, now 8-game winning streak, if I recall correctly. So, you know, seasons sort of, you know, ebb and flow depending on what's going on, who's available, you know, the team's tiredness, their youth, their, you know, whatever the sort of complex mechanisms and organisms of a group of, you know, 12 to 15 men in the NBA's case that are, you know, trying to fight for a championship. So, you know, expecting for a team to go 73-9 isn't necessarily the best way of saying it, but at the same time, we should have, you know, expectations that they're not going to do as much of the same, you know, boneheaded moves every single night that we expect for, you know, throughout the season. Things should, you know, get better. And compared to that Miami game, you know, earlier this season, they have by leaps and bounds gotten better, other than their defense sort of, like, you know, going down and up depending on their mood and, you know, wanting to actually play some defense every once in a while.
Yeah, we've seen stretches where this team can lock in. And again, that's where, you know, I'm not super worried about it. I think that when they do get to a playoff series, or when they get to the matchups that are, you know, maybe the more primetime matchups, I've been saying it for a while now. I think that the game against the Los Angeles Lakers here coming up Saturday, January 18th, will be a big test for this team overall. That's only now, what, four games away. So that's 4 games away. That's going to be a huge test for this Rockets club. I think it's going to be a great chance for them to, you know, come out on a national TV, you know, kind of stage and basically show everybody what they can do. Or maybe they'll come out and have a stinker. I'm not really sure. I'm hoping that they can come out and actually, you know, perform to the best of their abilities. Ideally, you have a game where James Harden thrives, where Russell Westbrook thrives, and where the shooters all click. Because when all three of those things happen, this Rockets team is really, really tough to beat. Now, thank you, Britt, for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time to record this with us. Do you want to go ahead and plug your Twitter handle and anything else you got?
Yep. So on Twitter, my username is pretty long. It's Britt Robotista. So BritRobotista. And that's also on Instagram. If you want to follow me, I usually create very long Twitter threads about various things that either frustrate me or make me excited or make me sad. And it, most of it is usually about the Rockets. There's other things too. So if you want to follow me, I definitely recommend for you to do so.
All right. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Again, that was Britt Robotista over on Twitter. So if you're not giving her a follow, go ahead and go do so. Again, that's at BritRobotista. She puts out a lot of really great Rockets commentary and thoughts. So definitely go give her a follow. And because this is an overtime pod and not the regular format of which that we are used to doing, I'm not going to use my usual spiel at the end of the program. You guys know where to follow me on Twitter, at JT Gatlin. The show's on there, at Locked On Rockets. That's pretty much all I'm going to plug. Thank you guys for listening, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon, right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.